to another episode of Three Wise DMs, the podcast for three Dungeon Masters. I've been doing this for way too long. Talk about all the things we do to try to make our games as good as they can be.
Hi, I'm Tony.
I'm Chris.
We built this city. We built this city on rock and roll. Built this city. We built this city on rock and roll. Doom, doom, doom. And then probably some sort of weird synth crap. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to an episode of Three Wise DMs. This is the Rock and Roll DM, DM Dave. And that song, if anybody remembers...
It's a great song.
Yeah, episode...
That feels like a repeat right there.
It was.
Yes.
It is a repeat for good reason, because in episode 112... If you guys go all the way back in the Wayback Machine, hit episode 112, Terrain, Maps, and Minis, oh my, where we had Tony and I. This was actually before DM Chris, even. This is how far back we're going, people. We had the Wizard Washburn on to talk about the long tradition of terrain and maps and minis in D&D, because a lot of people think that it's more of a newer thing. With things like Dwarven Forge and Dungeon Crate and all that. And it's really not. It goes all the way back to the beginnings of the game. So this is kind of a little bit of a sequel to that episode where we're going to see what did we learn from the Wizard Washburn and did we put it into practice? But then also we had an interesting comment from our Minis Monday. So if you guys go on our socials, you can get our hashtag Minis Monday where we kind of show you what we were playing that weekend. And then we ask you to show us what you're playing that weekend. So, like, you know, start hashtagging it out. Minis Monday, man. Let's go viral with it. I guess that's how it works. I'm not really sure.
I think viral is the term, yes.
Yeah, I've never done anything that's gone viral, except maybe COVID. I think that was about it.
Several flus.
Anyway, we had a really great comment from our longtime friend of the show, Jim Laubacher. About our recent Minis Monday, which was about the Lord of the Rings campaign. It was session 2, level 2. So, but he said that unfortunately he was playing nothing this weekend because everything was delayed with Easter. He said, when you folks do more terrain / building intensive adventures, what do you use? 3D printed stuff from Etsy, some of the other terrain building sellers, things like that. And it made me think, like, we do have a lot of stuff in our games. That we show off, and we've been starting to do more and more and more with that. So we're going to kind of delve into that now with kind of the sequel to episode 112, and let's see what we've learned from the Wizard Washburn, see if we graduated here. What do you guys think?
So, I mean, it's all about visual aids and adding to the immersion. And honestly, it's like something that you can just put a little bit into, like they said about the learning of chess, you know, a gnat can drink from, you know, all that knowledge or soak, an elephant can bathe in it. I like to throw down a poster and then maybe some dungeon tiles over it, then perhaps some rocks and some trees, depending upon the terrain, some walls. But I want to be very clear. This is not like to absolute accurate. Like if I'm running, you know, Storm King's Thunder, I'm not reconstructing the maelstrom room by room. And why am I not? Because my table is only so big. We got to kind of like, you know, like a lot of my stories, I kind of get to the point, I got to condense them. But they add some nice flavor to the session itself. And that's before we even get into picking out any figs. The supplemented out, but really it's very well received at all the games I both play in and run.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Like adding some flavor there. Like you don't always need, like sometimes we have some, I go back to the Curse of Strahd finale, we have some really elaborate, like a piece of scenery there, but very often it's
Metal
just
Gakus.
But very often it's just literally some setting up some trees, a couple rocks, stuff like that. Just some environmental stuff, some stuff that you have around, some spare bits and pieces that you have to create the impression. Because I think to Tony's point, like, very difficult. Like, it's, you're used to movies and all that other stuff. Like, we're not going to recreate that here. We're moving minis around on it, right? So there has to be enough to give you the flavor and give you the spark to be able to imagine it when I start to describe it. Shouldn't serve too much of a purpose in there, right? Like it's adding the flavor. It's you know, you can find very often that you don't need to go crazy with expensive stuff to be able to, or being crafty to be able to have some cool scenery for your games.
So funny enough, this I actually went back and listened to the old episode because I wanted to get a sense, like, where have we come since then? Because that was actually, Tony, that was right at the time when we had kind of already started the Dragonlance campaign. So we had finished the Curse of Strahd campaign, obviously, with that huge finale, which we did a massive blowout. And we've talked about that many times as to why, because it was a massive ending. It was like the second ending to a really huge epic campaign. So we blew out all the stops, thankfully, because we have a friend like Scott out there. But with the Dragonlance campaign, we had just started that, and Scott had been really wanting to, since he was a player in it, to bring set pieces and stuff. So we really started to immerse ourselves more with this kind of stuff. At that same point, Tony, you were starting the Ragnarok campaign right around that time as well. And I know, especially in the beginning, you were doing a ton of terrain stuff because you were starting to play out and like, see, well, what do I like? What's my style with this? Because I like terrain, I like minis, I like these things. But what is my style, right? So you turned the fire hose completely on, and then as it started, the water started to come down. You were able to finally focus it in on the way you like to do it. And that kind of brings to the what you've been doing with the girls game. So a lot of you guys don't really see this because we don't really share as much of that. We've done a couple things, but Tony is running Jen and two of her friends through this really kit-bashed Curse of Strahd adventure, but it's also the Feywild with the Witchlight. Yeah, you got this whole thing, but it's really fun because when you were saying you lay down a mat and then you put out some stuff, your terrain now, when you set up those pieces and you send us all pics of it.
I owe you a picture, actually.
Yeah, it literally looks like a board game setup, you know? And it's, you almost like lead it out. And you're using things like trees and rocks. You're not going crazy and building all of this stuff, but you'll have little ornament pieces or something that are signifying something, almost like this maze that the characters are going to then, you know, go scene to scene to scene through. And that's kind of seems to have become the way in which you approach that. Now with Chris, like you've started now with the Lord of the Rings thing, you're doing a mixture of all of it, right? You'll bring in some serious terrain pieces. Like you have the, what are the tiles you got now?
Oh,
what are
they called? The Warlock tiles.
Warlock tiles. Yeah. So it's like the more accessible Dwarven Forge stuff, right? So, you know.
Slightly less expensive.
Yeah. And like some scenes, like when we were at Buckleberry Ferry, you set up a whole thing. But like this past session when we were at the White Tower and we got attacked by these Black Nemorians, and you guys can see that on our most recent Minis Monday, we used the board that you get from the campaign case that WotC put out. We put a couple trees out from Michael's, couple rocks, and it was exactly what we needed to be. So I love that we're kind of playing with all of it. We're doing really big things, but we're also just putting out some very simple stuff too.
No, and I think that's a good point, is like even that, or like we're talking about with Tony's thing, is that you can get a lot of these pieces. It's not like, obviously the Warlock tiles are cool, right? Like I spent extra on those, but those aren't the essence of what you do. You need, it's going to be a small part of your table. Stuff like the trees at Michael's. I mean, I'm finding really cool rocks outside that I'm like, oh, this would be like, this looks scale. Like this would be a neat rock, right? Stuff around the house, like the White Tower was like a Santa freaking lantern thing where it's tall enough that in the pictures, you don't really see the fact that it's just Santa turned around, but it had the right profile in there. Like there's a lot of stuff that they have in those craft stores that are like little tiny pieces. They have miniatures inside of Michael's, especially. I go there a lot. I feel like I'm doing a commercial for them, but I find a lot of things there. And then even stuff like packing materials and stuff that you get, like a lot of this, the terrain that Scott built for like the bigger stuff can be stuff that he got in a, you know, in a package somewhere that looked cool, or a can that he got, you know, and he's like, hey, if I paint this, all of a sudden it looks like something else. Like you don't have to go crazy with building or buying terrain. Like a lot of it can be found cheaply and works really well just around, you know.
Absolutely. And kind of like we talked about with Scott originally as well. I went out when, Tony, you were running Chris's one birthday game where we were doing the giant 12-person game. We did an episode about it. We did an article about it. And we ran it with two different DMs, and then you finally kind of ran the entire finale at the end. But it was a big thing, so I built out the Dragon's Lair. And literally, I got some of the foam board that Scott talked about. You just go over to Lowe's or Home Depot, whatever. And we cut out some pieces. We shot it with this kind of rocky spray, and we had a happy accident because it kind of melted. It made it look even rockier. I have so many of those.
Burns.
Yeah, I have so many of those pieces now.
Ah, chemical burns.
And I've even sliced some of them in half. So now they're just these rocky outcroppings that I have brought out. I can't even say how many times to create some level of three-dimensionality to the battle map, right? Because like I said in those earlier episodes too, I love battle maps. I love terrain. I love minis. I love that tactical feel of it. I think we're all kind of there. But you don't have to have it set up and be like when we did Camp Carrion Clay in the Dragonlance campaign. And Scott had literally, I sent him a picture and he built out Camp Carrion Clay. Like, that was awesome. Not every single thing has to be to that level, you know, but it is fun sometimes when you have a big piece or a big, something big that's going to happen. Like Tony with the Ragnarok finale, you pulled out a lot of stops with that, right? We had a Bifrost Bridge. We brought back the Danvereich with the huge, wooden wall fencing, right? I mean, there were multiple pieces there, but not everything had to be huge. But even small things, rocks, trees, little rocky outcroppings that you maybe formed from foam board. Chris, you were saying like packing material. I got that idea from Scott as well. And we actually got a delivery from like this wine company or whatever they sent us. And what it put the bottles in, when you flip it over, it literally looks, I have like 12 like tower houses. They almost look like something from like Tatooine or something like that. I'm actually going to probably break them out for like
you throw a coat of paint on it and all of a
I'm going to shoot it with some.
The great mind primer, can all of a sudden turn it into something more like with inspiration.
And I know we're not going to go deeply into this, but it is a good point because I think a lot of this has also come because of our interest and our playing in Warhammer 40K too. Because we've started to have battles and be like, oh, well, I want terrain out here and I don't want just stuff that I grabbed off the table in the dining room that's supposed to look like a tower or something. Like, I want like some sort of tower, right? So we're starting to look for things and see this stuff in ways that is, easy terrain, as it were.
One of my last battles we had for the actual Warhammer campaign, it looked like I was fighting through a Dutch village complete with a windmill. So, you know.
Exactly. Not everything is
Scott has the wargaming background, so he has it all for the deployment stuff. Yeah.
You know, orcs, ultramarines, windmills. It'll works. And I think Scott threw together the Davenright for me in like 4 hours. Like, that was just, you know, amazing. But yeah, you're not going to always have props like that. I use shiny rocks. Like, we're in the Feywild. You get a bag of red rocks, a bag of blue rocks. You put them in strategic places around the board to add a little bit of a shimmering effect. Nothing expensive there. I have thick cardboard where it was like elevated terrain over mud or lava or water or things like that. Dave got me the Abashi tiles, which are pretty cool. They can really, real quick, let's throw together a maze with an open top so your guys can move around through it. And Jen got me two different sets from the Tenfold Dungeons, which really handles indoor traveling. You're in a haunted house, you're in a mansion, you're in a crypt, you're in the sewers very well because you have tunnels and it just comes together for you very cleanly. One of the obstacles is you bump into from where you're decorating to functionality, so that when your characters are trying to have a battle, you just have to be careful. You don't want them, like, the entire party and all the monsters fighting on a space the size of a mouse pad.
thinking about it earlier when you were talking about it a little bit, Dave, is like when you were talking about the foam, like the steak things, the stuff you made out of the foam board, the rocky outcroppings.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
I'm like, those work because characters don't spend, or the players don't spend like 5 minutes trying to balance their minis on weird sections of like crazy terrain stuff.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Right. There's the flavor, but it doesn't run the game. Like it enhances it. Like I know that there's like this is a cliff here, right? But I don't need to design this whole cliff and all these other things. I can keep it light. I can keep the area, like to Tony's point, the area where people are going to have combat clean. Like I would have put more trees out there, but as I noticed the last time we played, like the more trees I put out there, the more times people reach across to grab a mini and they knock a tree over, and then maybe it knocks a mini over and you're like, all right, hold on. And you got to set them up again and stuff. So
yeah, you need to put like a little wider base on it or something.
Like let it enhance the game. But yeah, as soon as it starts to get in the way of the reason you're putting it out there is like, we're going to do something in this space now, then it starts to be too much. So.
Tony, I didn't even think it's been such a time since I've been running some games that I forgot about the Abishai tiles, the dungeon system that they have. I actually like it. I got them for both you guys for Christmas because it's like $50, I want to say, and you get literally something that you can build an entire dungeon out of. It's just little foam pieces, and it's just a sticker of what looks like dungeon rocks, dungeon bricks that you put over top. So there's a little bit of an assembly to it, but that's something that now anytime I want to create any kind of dungeon or room or anything, I have something to create. Not like we were saying, I think this is a good point, not a perfect replica of what I'm trying to do, but it's giving the idea of it, but it's also giving the idea of it in three dimensions. And I think that's one of the big things. Once you start to lift it up off of that battle map, that's when things really start to get fun, because then people are utilizing it in ways that affect the encounters that you're putting down on there. As we've said too, don't put stuff like this down though, unless you're planning on having an encounter of some kind there, because people do get battle mat psychosis. Like, it is a thing. You put that out and they're gonna be like, okay, this is what's happening. Tony, if that's what part of what was happening in Journey to Ragnarok in the very early days, when you were like, I just love terrain, I want to do all kinds of stuff, and you were getting into like going to Michael's and getting like, oh, this will work for ice, and you and Jen would go out on a Friday night and like buy terrain stuff, right?
Yeah, spray painting poster board with like glittery white paint. Yeah.
You were doing like, you would have scene changes, and some of the scenes were just like, here's a cool scene and we're moving through. And you, I think you started to realize, okay, yeah, I don't need that. I could just describe that for them. And we have the boat out on my little ocean board that you built, you know, and you can reuse a lot of these pieces. But yeah, everything didn't have to be a set piece, because, you know, when you put down set pieces, people think, okay, something is here.
Yeah, reusability is king. You really, so Mount Gaucus for the Curse of Strahd finale, truly legendary. But how often is that even possible? It's really not. So it's advised, like, for example, you're in a themed area. Like, I know I'm running a Curse of Strahd Into the Witchlight hybrid kind of session, you know, sequence of sessions here. So either my terrain is all dark and gloomy, like it's Halloween land, or it's glittery and vibrant and very rich with colors and forests and what have you. So I just keep building my bench, so to speak, with like all kinds of decorations that fit into that. Like, I got a tire swing, a couple of stumps.
You reused that a couple times. Yeah.
Oh, Jen loves that. You know, that's just like one of her favorite props. But when you start adding things to this, like if you're new at this, one of the things that helped me in the beginning was, as a DM, one of my favorite all time fig props was I got a whole pack of glow-in-the-dark zombies, because you're gonna be fighting minions all the time. You're not gonna be able to like, oh, these are knights, but these are brigands. Now, that's something you've been collecting for 10 years. You could differentiate between those two things. For the beginning, get yourself a bunch of generic monsters you can repurpose, and they work fantastic. Besides, the really cool characters on the board are your character's figs anyway, especially if Scott made them.
Don't be intimidated by it. You can go with the gray figures right out of the package. You can use whatever you want. You can use coins or different things as characters inside of the things. But I think that we were back to earlier, the boat, I think, is a really great example. The boat setup we had in Journey to Ragnarok. Essentially, it's a like a piece of cloth that looks really like it's like it looks like a river or like an ocean, right? That you would lay out there, and then we would lay the boat that Scott had created in the middle, which obviously is really nice. I mean, it's like a paper terrain Viking ship, but the idea is that it's literally it just sits in the middle of the table there in on the sea looking mat, and you just put your characters in there, and then we travel great distances without ever actually moving there, but it totally gives you the flavor like we're all in the ship together. Like it's very much like it's only two pieces, right? And the minis that we put into it, but yet it was a cool part that allowed for all of those, like the a lot of the campfire tale stuff that we did when we were traveling across the ocean, where we would, you know, have like shifts and we would be talking two by two. So
That's a very good point, Chris. It's again, it's just that focal point that gives you something to tune into. I want to make one point, and then I'm going to kind of pivot here. We're going to go a little deeper into some of this stuff. But one thing, so we have Tony has a huge collection of minis. He continually each game he continually brings out even more ones. That we hadn't seen yet from, like, especially his 4E days. I feel like that's
no one knows what truly is there except for
Yeah, I think that's when it really blew up.
It's like five things I forgot about, but yes.
And then obviously, like, Scott, we've talked before, like, bringing him into the groups, he makes a lot of custom minis. We have started to paint minis ourselves. We find that to be enjoyable. Not everyone is going to, and that's totally understandable. So like what Tony said, like he'll get like just the big tube of monsters and figures. You could totally do that. But I will say when I started it back out with the Pathfinder game, because they gave you these in the beginner box, and then I went and got some additionals, was their Pathfinder pawns. You also have the company out there, Skinny Minis. So in essence, they got little bases, and it's a little like cardboard or cardstock piece that has figures on it, monsters on it, and you can pop that and you can have that out on the board. I still use them at times in my own games because my monster collection is not quite so impressive yet. But those are an easy way to have some minis out there in some fashion that look cool. They have really cool artwork on them, but it's something that you can just have on the side. You don't have to have a whole glass case that you're going to store all these things in. But with that said, and I think, Chris, this is a great pivot point for it, for the Viking ship on the little blue, the piece of blue poster board that Tony had created. He actually put a piece of fabric over it, so it had kind of like texture to it. It looked kind of ocean-like.
No, it was very
wonderful. Right, but now there were times where you would throw a kraken out there or an aboleth or something like that because we had an encounter on the ocean, and we have a battle and let's roll initiative and all of that. And now it's a battle map. But a lot of times, as Chris said, it was a focal point. It was something that added to the session. So that's also stuff. Not everything has to be terrain and maps and minis. It can also be the immersion of what are you showing in the game? Are you do you do handouts in your game, right? Do you have a projector and you do some sort of like rotating screen? Whatever those types of things. But some of those that we also use, let's go into some of that we use to kind of create a little bit more tactile sense, right? We're bringing in more of the senses than just hearing, right?
So I got some unpopular opinions here. I use AI images in my game. It's true. I'm guilty of this. I am ruining the world. And, you know, they're fun because I can create an AI image for everything in my game. Now, DMs, this doesn't mean you've destroyed block texts. Really, I think the really sweet spot for a text description, in my humble opinion, is roughly three sentences. But, I mean, generally speaking. So, you guys find a ring, Here's a picture. You're at a door. Here's a picture. And yes, I create a lot of imagery in my games, but I got my map before everybody that kind of looks like a board game. And then I've got the iPad up with any number of images that are generated through Meta AI that show monsters, the environment. It just adds to that because, you know, I could describe, and I came from Theater of the Mind and I love Theater of the Mind, but I could describe a room, I could unfold a scene, and it's the same thing if you're reading a book. You know, everybody's having a different take on this. This kind of like draws it in and adds like more of a cinematic element to it, and I think that also helps with the immersion greatly.
I took bits from both of your guys' campaigns with that, like as far as the visual aids, like you would hang pictures sometimes on your screen to illustrate a person or an area, like one of the cities, like Calaman or something like that. And then Tony, with you, you had like the iPad where you turn it around and you'd show the pictures off. And truthfully, I used AI images for the Lord of the Rings this time. And so, but what I wanted to do.
Absolutely.
Was,
that's why Master Balin.
I wanted to, like, one of the things George I wanted C. to do Scott. Is I wanted to, because I see sometimes you would have to struggle to have to negotiate and turn it right. And there was a limited amount of time that you could get it. So I was like, well, I have a couple monitors here. So I set up a monitor sort of next to the DM screen where I can run a PowerPoint presentation of the images that I generate. But yeah, no, I searched the internet for good visual images. Nothing too much. You want to kind of use it scene by scene. Like it shouldn't you shouldn't have like 1,000 pictures in there, but it should be something like I'm setting the tone here. We're stepping into a forest. Boom, here's a forest thing. Now I'm not showing you 25 pictures of the forest as you progress through, but when you hit something else unique or something else where I'm like, oh, I need to highlight this, then I'll throw in a picture or have AI draw me a picture, which has helped a lot with The Lord of the Rings has people that are not part of the actual lore. Like some of the people that you meet in the game are, you know, NPCs that are part of just a particular story. And so for those ones, I can use it for those. And then finally, the handouts is you were doing a lot of handouts in Dragonlance. And I think something about that, like handing somebody a piece of paper that says, oh, here, this is what this said. Or like I started doing it last game with Scott with the old lore check where I'm like, here, instead of me saying it and telling you and just telling the whole table, here's a bit of paper, it's something he can hold on, and then it's his knowledge, and he sort of, the funny thing was he spit it back out, but he spit it back out as if it was in his own words versus me just like reciting the old lore and be like, I just said that, that's what I said, you know, kind of thing. So I think those things add a three-dimensionality too. Like you, it's something I have in my hands as we're passing it around the table, everyone can take a look at it afterwards and stuff like that. So makes it fun.
Yeah, I started that big time in the Dragonlance campaign. Like I've said before, like with the Dragonlance campaign, I tried to do everything that I've always wanted to do in a campaign in the campaign. I tried the best I could and see how things landed. And I feel like I found like a rhythm with that. But yeah, I loved the missives. So I literally went to, I think it was Staples probably. And they had like, I still have like 100 sheets of it. But it was just printer paper that had like a scroll that was opened up. And I was like, oh, that's so cool. So what I would do is I would just type out in my session notes what, you know, Consulti Fire Eyes, a missive from her, or Balafion when they handed certain things to people in power in Vogler or Calaman, and I would hand that out to the party. Or when you guys entered like the Sunward Fortress and there was a journal entries that I got, and those were things that over time gave you clues that had to do with the mystery that you were unfolding. And by giving you that, and then you guys have that now in your pack and it's actual paper, you could say, well, you do have some missives in there. And people oftentimes would start going through and reading through and be like, oh, well, what about this? If we remember how this was. So it gives that secrets and clues thing a even more of a way to land. So you can repeat it 7 times and then also hand them a piece of paper with it written on it.
Yeah. And here's right? a printed version for your records.
Yes. Yeah. And then, yeah, I like, now I'm still, a little more, old fashioned with it. So I will still print out certain pictures. I'm not so good. Chris, I think you really hit the sweet spot with the monitor and the PowerPoint presentation that you can flip. I think that's if you have the technology for it, if you have extra monitors hanging around, do that. But I'll just print out certain, if it's a very specific NPC that's kind of important, and I want you to kind of see the person, because by seeing them, you'll remember them in a different way. But then also, yeah, when you're entering cities, if you're entering Calaman, if you're seeing the floating citadel, right, in Dragonlance, if you can show like a landscape of what this city might look like think about when... in like the Fellowship of the Ring, when they're floating down the river and they pass the 2 huge statues of the old kings holding their hands out, or you finally see the white city of Gondor, like that gives you a ton of information in an instant because your eyes are now involved as well as your ears. And then if you're handing something out as well as your fingers too, right? So bringing that, the more, like I said before, more senses into it, is kind of what creates the level of immersion.
Back when I was doing a solo campaign with Chris, like a couple of years ago at this point, I used to, dare I say, like I would, share screen and show what kind of creature was there. I'd have to hunt down these monsters on Google, go find them, get an image, drop them in a Google Doc, flip it around.
No, you know, I remember.
Turn that to a token, all that good stuff. This really... shave some time, and as you can hear my DMing style, it's pretty involved. So when I can shave time off of something, I most certainly will. Something that I do that comes faster than I've done it for a while is create a playlist for each one of these games. I create a playlist, I title it which game it is, and I'm looking for music in at least 1 hour blocks. You can have scene transitions, like you want to go to different areas, have a different vibe to it that is recommended. If you're at one continuous place, you can get lucky and find one of those nice 4-hour tracks, and then just have like a track for a battle or a tense moment, and then some boss music at the end if that's the way it's going, and that kind of like wraps it up all rather nicely, still adding to the cinema.
Yeah, I got kind of lucky with the Lord of the Rings campaign. I basically just paired my Spotify to the Alexa Lord of the- and basically, just fire off like the things. Unfortunately, sometimes some of the songs don't always fit exactly what's going on, but they're always Lord of the Rings flavored. So I'm like, I guess it's okay. But I think to Tony's point, it's you want to have some good battle music. Besides any of the other things, I think that's one of the areas that it really adds some flavor. Just like when you watch like the movie things and they take the music out of whatever's happening and you're like, oh, this seems ridiculous.
The
like,
movie is terrible then.
Even if you just have to think just during battles, find a D&D battle music playlist or something and just pop one on and just have it kind of run in there. Not too loud because you don't want it to be disruptive, but... it starts to make it exciting. People start to, I know this song or something. A lot of times they have ones from like, popular video games and stuff. Like the one has like stuff from Dragon Age and games like that. So it's, it really does, just like everything else. And kind of to your point, the senses really like it adds something. It adds that cinematic flavor where the music is increasing the tension and you're thinking because it's providing that sort of emotional element to whatever's happening there.
Yeah, I ran into the same, Chris, you were running into the same problem I ran into with the playlists, is that like, it's awesome. And you're like, oh, this is great. And like in the Lord of the Rings, like the playlist starts with like the Shire music and it's like, oh, this is great. Da, da, da. And then all of a sudden, like you're supposed to be fighting like the Bridge of Khazad Dûm and it's still like some sort of pastoral fiddle music. So I had the same problem because in Dragonlance, I had the Dragonlance playlist that I found on Spotify and I added some things to it. And I would just hit that. I would hit it when we were starting the session and I would just kind of let it play through. There were a couple times where I had to go in if there was a good battle happening and like flip through really quick and find something that was like not, you know, some sort of weird ambiance music or something. But yeah, it's something that it's just in the background and it creates a level of additional noise that makes you feel like something else is happening. Right. Because silence is kind of jarring at times, you know, but I haven't gotten good. I don't want to add that much more to my plate where I'm having to like curate the list and know like what moods I'm hitting and I'm going to shift it and things like that. That's a little too much. So I just kind of hit play and let it kind of run.
They do have, going back to AI, and it truly is like it's used responsibly. When you're using it around the table with your friends to play a game, is totally responsible use. And they have AI apps that will help to do your music where you can type prompts into it and it'll change the music type and stuff like that. You can customize it where it's much smarter. It'll listen to what you're saying at the table. You can customize it if you want to go to those depths. It's like we were kind of talking about with terrain. It's like you can get warlock tiles, you can get the dungeon crate stuff. Like I was really tempted. Their caverns are the best ones that I've seen the ones that are done there. Like they're really nice. Obviously expensive as hell and stuff like that. But you don't need that too. You could have your rocky outcroppings and a couple rocks. And for all intents and purposes, that's a cavern too. Right. Like it's the same thing with the music. If it's like, as long as you're making sure you hit the battle scenes good, it's, you know, do take it as deep as you want to take it, because it's the players, they're going to enjoy playing the game. If everything else is just sort of enhancing their enjoyment of that.
On 4E, periodically, we went up on a chessboard because movement was so incredibly important. Not to say it's not as important in fifth edition, but really, like, I can't undersell like other powers. Like you could move two spaces this way and then do a feint and all this other crazy stuff. One thing, it's probably another unpopular opinion, you really should be careful when you're throwing a lot of energy into creating something that is going to get very limited use. Now, there is one really cool thing you could toss out there for shock value then, and everybody can look at it and go, oh my god, that's cool, but that can't be all the time. Like if you're really spending a lot of time creating something, the thing is, and that's great, and I encourage your hobby, don't let it detract from the plot, the story, the lore, all the other important aspects that make your game run smoothly.
I think it's a good point. There is, like, with any of this, it's about, like, it's not about turning your prep into some crazy thing where now this week I have to be stressed about, all right, how am I going to get this? How am I going to create that? Like this, how am I going to create the Star of the Mist, the tower, and all this other stuff? Like, luckily,
I can't wait to see.
I have a friend that I can just text and send him like things, and he can bring me something that's pretty much going to suffice. But, you know, even what I'm doing with it is like, I don't want to spend a lot of time like that. Like, kind of to your point, Tony, with the AI, like if there's times where I don't want to go look through 1,000 female, like older looking elven females to find Brasmin the custodian. I just threw in the description of her into ChatGPT and boom, and said, please put her in front of the Asterion. Right, the custodian tower, the very first of the white towers there, and it did it. Put her in front of there, and all of a sudden, when I flashed that up, now it's, she's somewhat unique, but she's in that world. It has some flavor, and I didn't spend as much time as I might have going, I don't know, is this one better or is this one better? Most of them are going to look kind of anime style, right? Like, or something like that. Like, she needed to be, you know, or too sexy. Like, she needed to have more of, like, the motherly look. So,
yeah, don't get me started on that.
Yeah. No, it's, I mean, same thing with the handouts and stuff like that. Like, I've used it to help me. Like, you can use it, have it write you a little song. That, like, I had it write a dwarven song for me. I provided what I wanted it to do, but then you can use those things to hand out there. And it's something that you don't have to do a whole lot for prep. Like, you know what you want to deliver. It's just sort of an extra set of hands that can help you to free up your time to focus on the really important things, the characters that are going to be at the table, what their stories are, like where the campaign is going, versus worrying about point in time things.
As Scott had said in the way back in that terrain episode, if this becomes a chore, then don't do it, you know. And he also said he was a player in these games, so he could build this stuff, and that's all he has to bring. He doesn't have to also develop the game, too. You know, I mean, that is a good point for DMs out there, you know. But with that said, it's about that time for some final thoughts. So with how we've been kind of going here, so this is like terrain maps, minis, and props, oh my, we've added to. But ways that we are bringing in more and more senses to for the immersion in the game. Like, what are your guys' final thoughts, and what are some of your standbys that you really like to use?
I feel like you can add these visual aids that will create a good amount of flavor and immersion in your games without going too wild. Like, yeah, all of us really are over the top, and that's great, but you certainly don't need to. You could get yourself some dungeon tiles, some poster board, some trees you'd get from like around a train station, some rocks, some regular figs. You don't need to create, you're not going to overnight. Like, you know, we've been at this for a long time. I've been collecting figs for longer than I care to admit, and you don't need all that. That's great to have. So look for things that are really going to get the most reusable value in the beginning. That's where I say with that. I do music cost. You hook that up to a speaker. Wireless speakers are everywhere these days. Or if you're playing it off your laptop, you can make a playlist, honestly, in a couple of minutes. And that adds a nice amount of immersion to the game. And not everybody's down for the images or have the ability to show that on two different devices. Like, Chris uses a monitor. I use an iPad. Dave likes to print his stuff out. It's nice to have. Even when I'm doing my own personal lights, it's nice for me to have an image for me to look at. So as I'm going around, that kind of not only gives me a clear picture of what I'm describing, aside from my block text, it also breaks everything up in my docs. So like, I'm scrolling around from room to room like, and that's where the holder. Everybody start making saving throws.
I think, you know, obviously you don't want it to run your game. You want it to help to enhance your game. You want this, you want to introduce these things when I need to show you something else. I want to engage with you a little bit more about this. I want to provide a handout. There's the music now during combat. It's going to add a little bit more there. I think that's a lot of the stuff is that you want it to, you know, when I select the time that I want to show you the image, it's when that image needs to be shown, but I don't want to show you 1,000 images. It's just there to add that flavor. Like, in many ways, you know, I probably show more pictures than you do hung during Dragonlance, but in many ways, the idea is much the same. It's just setting a scene and everything like that. And then I think also, kind of to Tony's point earlier, is that it's using AI to help. It's a great tool that's available for you now for prep, so that you can focus on that. Like I said, like for most of, I have a forest setup, and I have an underground setup, and I have like a sort of a city setup. And unless it's something that is a dramatic, this is a scene that needs the thing, like where I fought the fight in front of the White Tower was something that wasn't even necessarily going to happen. It was sort of a random encounter based upon how things went with Serzor, the guy who ended up being the spy. So that one is just the simple battle mat with a couple trees from Michael's and a couple rocks and the sanded thing turned around. And once you put the minis out there and you start playing, oh, it might as well be the hill up there up to Asterion there. So I think that you don't have to stress about it. And to Scott's point, it shouldn't be a chore, but always find, you know, use AI for art, use AI for to help to add some additional meat around your ideas. You may not like box text, but if you want to pass out a song, if you want to provide additional story, sometimes we do the narrative side quests. It can be very helpful with narrative side quests in six players. I can speak from experience is that, you know, you don't want it to do everything for you. You want to tell it, you know, that you tell it what you want it to do so that it's not just it doing all the work, but it's a great set of hands.
A couple things. Yeah. I mean, the things that I think are that I kind of always use at this point is one is the music, because that's so easy. Tony, like you said, it's just there. So, you know, Spotify, Pandora, whatever, they're just there. And there's tons and tons of playlists of that. You can also curate your own, but just having some music, it really just, it helps to partition game time from normal time. I'm always using some level of terrain, whatever that might be. That could be just the board from the campaign case, that I found at Ollie's for like $4 or whatever it was. The dungeon tiles reincarnated are great. You can throw them out. They can be a little limiting. And also simple things like the Abishai dungeon walls, the dungeon system, the modular system, and you can kind of build out your own walls and rooms. Those are things, like Tony said, I'm going to have tons of reusability for, because I'm going to constantly be using those for everything. I mean, how many dungeons are you going to go into? A lot, you know, trees and rocks. You're going to use a lot of them. And it's surprising when you put a couple things out how quickly it turns into a whole terrain set there. And then, yeah, handouts, I think, are wonderful and indispensable, because it gives it to the player in a concrete way. So your secrets and clues gets right to them, and you can use that to have them be able to start to piece together what you're doing. And like Chris experienced with Scott in the last game, it lets the player have the agency to divulge this information in a way that is, you know, increases the role play, which just increases the immersion as well. That's going to be it for me this week. This was fun, though, kind of getting into some more of what we have started to utilize, because we can't all build these massive play sets in our spare time like some of our friends do. But we are doing what we can and enjoying it. So that's going to be it for us this week. This was obviously not really a listener question, even though Jim's comment kind of fostered the idea that we then kind of nailed down. So please reach out to us if you do have a question, if you have an issue at your table. We are DMs with problems. We love to help DMs with problems. So send them in to us. 3wisedms.com. You can put it in the What's Your Problem field. You can reach out to us by email at 3wisedms@gmail.com. And just like Jim did, just start commenting on some of our posts, and we get a little bit of a conversation going and see where that leads. It might lead to an episode like today. You can also obviously find, you can actually find that episode 112, Terrain Maps and Minis Oh My, on our YouTube channel. We have a couple of our episodes over there, so head on over, subscribe, like, hit the bell icon, do the things that it requires you to do. Yeah, and that will that helps us grow the show. We really appreciate that. And I mean, regardless of whatever immersion you do for your table, whether it's handouts or minis or terrain or trees and rocks, and the best thing to immerse yourself in the game is with dice, because they are very tactile. And they sound fun when they hit the table, and then you have to look at them to see the natural one that you rolled a third time in that session. So you can get some great dice over at our affiliate link at fanrolldice.com/REF/2871. You put in the code 3WISEDMS10, that's the number 3WISEDMS, the number 10, and you get 10% off your order. That, I think, is all of the house cleaning that needs to be done and all of that. So as we do each episode, we are going to let our dear old erstwhile leader take us out.
And thank you all at home for listening to another episode of 3 Wise DMs. If you like what you heard, please give us the 5-star rating in your podcast platform. And if you want to hear us answer one of your questions, this was our question. This is something that we brought to the table, but we often answer listener questions. So if you want to hear us answer one of your questions, please send it in. You can send it to our email address, 3wisedms@gmail.com. You can go to our website, 3wisedms.com, put it in the What's Your Problem field, or talk to us on Instagram, Facebook. They're active in all those places. And we're always looking for new material for the next podcast. We love helping you solve the problems you have. This is a podcast for Dungeon Masters with Problems. That's what we're really here to do. And that's it for this week. We'll see you next time. 3 Wise DMs.